Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Be careful when having receipts emailed to you. It looks like Square, along with many other credit card processing companies, is selling your contact information. The acquisition of Twitter by Elon Musk happened last week, and the new owner isn't wasting any time to make changes. Verified accounts are rumored to cost $20 a month. Big companies are preemptively pulling advertising from the platform. 25% of Twitter's workforce may be terminated. And in brighter news, Vine is coming back. And are subscriptions the future of the internet? We discuss this and more in episode 58 of The Tech John. From Columbus, Ohio, I'm your host, Rob Dunwood.
And coming out of Philly, it's your girl, Tech Life Steph.
And out of Atlanta, this is Terrence Gaines, a.k.a. Brother Tech, a.k.a. I can't wait for these kids to come home with this Halloween candy. I'm going to take my dad tax. That's my new a.k.a. dad tax.
So I'm an empty nester now. And even though my, you know, my 17-year-old senior last year wasn't really trick-or-treating, there was candy in the house. And there ain't no candy in the house, so I'm missing that. But, y'all, I got to tell you about something that I experienced this weekend. Y'all are, you know, you're already initiated because you went to HBCU. I didn't go to an HBCU. So what you see on video and what you hear about from, you know, from stories that are passed down through the generations, just don't match with actually experiencing the homecoming at a historically black university or college. So I had, you see, I'm wearing my Aggies hat. I'm wearing my A&T hat. So I went down to North Carolina this weekend for what they have termed GHO, the greatest homecoming on earth. And because I have not been to all homecomings, I cannot attest that it is the greatest, but it was great.
You've never been to one, so you just complied.
Like I said, that's what they call it. If that's what you want to be called, that's what I'll call you. But I can't say this. It was awesome. It was great.
Imagine being there as a 20-year-old.
For real.
that's the real flex. I'm like, you know, imagine being a student there and that's your experience. It's like no other. It really is. I don't understand how all black people don't go to HBCUs, but it's something special.
I guess we need people on the inside as well as the people on the outside.
True. And scholarships. I mean, I wouldn't turn down no free money to go to a PWI, so.
Like I said, so I did, I visited Howard when I was when I was in high school, but for my plan was to go play 3 years, get drafted around mid first round, as the greatest defensive end that anybody's ever seen, and then go play in the league. That was the plan.
Damn statistics.
Yeah. That was the plan. Didn't quite work out that way. So hindsight being 2020, maybe a different decision would have been made. But man, when I tell you it was a good time from the beginning to the end and on campus stuff, there were no problems that people might think there were. I mean, there was the problem that they have on campus is there's just a lot of trash on Sunday morning. They got to be picked up, but that's pretty much the case with any homecoming anywhere, with a large group of people. But, there was no problems, but man, it was just smooth and it was fun. and it was age appropriate for me. So I was like, you know, my, you know, folks are saying, well, did you get to hang out with your, you know, with your youngin? It's like, nope. she got her freshman that she hanging out with. And I was hanging out with the other 45 to 50 year olds.
I'm pretty sure that logistically would have been impossible anyway to try to find your kid on campus during homecoming at an HBCU.
So there's some tech that we can talk about. Google Maps, where you can share your location. That's dope. It works well. That actually works. So when it did come to where you're going to be at so we can get this ticket or that kind of ticket, not just with my youngin', but with, you know, some of the other, you know, adults that I was hanging out with that I went with, that stuff worked out pretty good to where you can just walk to the dots and, you know, get to where you're going. And then one of the things we talked about this on a tech story. I believe it was the beginning of this month when Apple, or I should say Square, started allowing you to use the iPhone to do contactless payments or wireless payment, mm-hmm. or I guess mobile payments, you know, right on your phone where it could do, you know, mm-hmm. just tap your card
as a vendor, as a merchant.
Exactly. So if you can, I don't think I'm exaggerating if I would say there were probably upwards of 350 to 500 vendors at this thing. Cause they were everywhere. I mean, just, you know, all under the stadium, there's like an entire street that goes through the campus. It's just
selling unlicensed, North Carolina merchandise.
Yeah.
And fish plates.
Yes. Right. And it's like, you know, basically I still have not got the smell of ribs out of my skin yet. It's like, cause ribs are being cooked everywhere. But, what was interesting is that a lot of the vendors, they have moved on. I mean, they were quick to upgrade their technology. And Terrence, it was one of the, you know, things you had said about why this is a cool thing is because it'll move the lines faster because you don't have to go to the cash register to make the payment. So just think about literally just all these pop-up tents and vendors everywhere just lined up one after the other for a country mile. So everybody is like, you know, bum rushing to try to see what sweatshirt, what hat, what, you know, book bag, whatever they want to get. And you're picking the stuff up. But then there's a line to go check out because they've only got one cash register. Did everybody have Square? No, some actually had regular POS systems with full cash registers. But for the ones who had Square, it did make it quicker because when you were dealing with the person that was showing you the, you know, I don't want that license plate bracket. I want that one. I want this hat, not that one. When the person that was doing that, when you're ready to pay, they would look at the line. Oh, I can just take it right here, right on their iPhone. And that was like, okay, this is what this technology allows. So I would contend
it'll probably, as more people adopt it, it may be faster than what a lot of people are doing when, you know, you go to vendors, you go to merchants. A lot of people are, they have the little, a stand or a credit card holder or something sitting up with their barcode where you can scan their Cash App or you can scan their, PayPal. Mm-hmm. Even with that, folks try to get slick. They'll pretend like they Cash App the merchant the money and real quickly show them the screen and it show you sent so-and-so and the merchant be like, oh yeah. And then they give them the merchandise. Come to find out, they just Cash App some random person, but they showed you the screen real fast. If I was a merchant, I would be more adept to pay, use the tap to pay because they still, even though they either have to give me their contactless credit card with the Wi-Fi capabilities in it, or scan their phone, is peer to peer versus Square and PayPal and Venmo, mm-hmm. or still there's a middleman with right. tap to pay. It's just like from me to you, not through anything else. So there's less headache, you know, there's less stuff to happen when I can pay you directly versus using an intermediary or a middleman, something like that.
And to the vendor, they're using the same app that they're used to. The only difference in the application now is that there's a button that says, tap to pay on, you know, on device. I can't remember the exact, you know, terminology or nomenclature that it uses, but there's a button. You click the button and then the screen on the phone changes. And until the transaction is done, you're on that screen. So the thing that you're talking about, you know, people trying to get slick with it. No, you can't get slick with it. It's either going to be, you know, the credit card or the phone that you put there, whatever card you have assigned to your phone or whatever credit card it is, that's what's actually getting charged. So that was the tech angle. That was, you know, at this, that I was like, this is pretty interesting. So much so that I cannot be a tech head I'm standing there watching people do it. To my wife's like, come on, let's go. I was like, no, I want to watch this. I got to talk about this on the show next week. So yeah, I thought that was kind of cool. But I wanted to say that to kind of bring us right into this first tech story that we're going to go over. You got to be careful when you choose to get receipts by email, because Square, or I should say that the company, you know, Square's parent company, they actually are selling your email address, or, you know, your contact information for anyone who's getting their receipts when they do these mobile payments. And it's not like everyone isn't doing
it. Was anybody surprised? Yeah, I was like,
So everybody is basically doing this, but you have to be aware that this is going on. If you look at the story that I had linked to on Protocol, it was kind of deep, because the basically the reporter, they go and get lunch, and it was like, how am I getting these emails on my work email? And they couldn't figure it out, to the point to where, okay, let me go into reporter mode. And they started actually calling merchants and asking, what is going on? What, you know, why is your information coming to me on this email address that I have never signed up for any of your stuff with? And through actually talking to the merchants, they were able to find out. I was like, oh yeah, they actually sell, sell us your information so that we can actually go out and contact you. That is not any different than probably any other company. I actually wrote down here, and I put many in other quotes. I wanted to say most, but I haven't contacted, most of them, so I can't answer. But my gut would tell me is that most companies probably sell your information, but we'll just go with many actually do. But it's something that you have to kind of be aware of now, because if you are paying with your phone, if you are, and you get that receipt right on your phone, that instant gratification for the purchase you just made, you're now on a system. They know what you bought. They sent that to somebody else, and you're going to start getting emails and that kind of stuff on that.
Yeah, it sucks. I mean, but I've just, I think that's just the price of doing business on the internet these days. What I don't like is that how hard they make it to opt out or unsubscribe,
right,
or anything.
Right.
Like, 'cause I've unsubscribed from a bunch of shit that I still get emails for. And I know, mm-hmm. I'm like, I've gone to the website and done it. I've mm-hmm. done it through Gmail. I've done it mm-hmm. through Hotmail. I've done it every which way but loose. And I'm still getting these emails. So that's the part I'm like, if I unsubscribe, you should not be able, that email should be off every list. So you shouldn't be able to resell it or whatever they're doing to keep me getting these emails. That shouldn't be able to happen, because then that defeats the purpose.
Yep. All it's going to take is for, a company to raise a loud enough concern, and then people really start to pay attention for Square to then have to do all this backtracking when they could either A, let you know upfront, and B, make it easier to opt out. It's just like this data, we say all, gold mine data, but it's just like, if that is it that, well, I mean, I'm asking a rhetorical question. Is it that valuable to where they will actually like create all these gray areas just to get it? And then again, it's better to ask for forgiveness than to ask for permission. So I'm assuming mm-hmm. it's worth it, obviously, because they're willing to, like, I'm reading this quote from the story that you put up, Rob. It says, it's often surprising to people, and surprising is never good when it comes to privacy. The senior legislator, yada, yada, yada. It acts primarily as a service provider when it comes to everyday buyers. That means it has fewer privacy obligations, because as it facilitates payments, it's just carrying out whatever directives the actual customer facing merchant asks for. In most cases, however, those small local retailers are themselves exempt from California law, meaning that Square gets to collect information on hundreds of millions of transactions, while consumers get very few rights from any of the firms they deal with. So it's just crazy how, again, rhetorical questions, but it's just like, technology is not fast enough to keep up with how people are trying to exploit the system. And it's just a shame that just laws and bills and things can't move fast enough to protect people's data and their privacy.
So Stephanie had made the comment that, it would be nice if you could opt out, and that would be cool. It would be nice if you could opt out easier, if you could more easily opt out of this stuff. Because I think by law, anybody's got your email on any type of list, they have to give you the ability to, you know, to click a checkbox or to, you know, to hit unsubscribe or something like that. But even if they were making that super easy to do, I wouldn't trust it. I think you have to take matters into your own hands.
Well, because even when you're on a website and you're like buying something and you get down to the bottom and it's like, you know, check here to subscribe, you know, do you want to receive emails or say, no one ever checks that box. Mm-hmm. I highly doubt that anybody ever actually checks that box. Now, some people may forget to uncheck it, but I highly doubt that anybody ever says, yes, please send me emails. Mm-hmm. But yet, we still get the emails. So it's just like, what is the point? You know, I feel like it's a losing battle. I don't want to be a pessimist about it, but I feel like it's a losing battle.
So one of the things that I do is I am a Gmail user. So I create aliases for any time I want to, you know, give my email address and I don't really want you to have my email address. I just create this alias that is part of my email, but I automatically have all that stuff go to trash. And it took, you know, a little bit of setting up and knowing how to do it, but it's not hard. The other thing too is that, the article didn't really talk about text messaging, but I'm imagining they would do the same thing with the text message. The companies, if they can get your telephone number, they're going to start sending you text messages as well, because studies are now showing that people are more likely to pay attention to a text message that they receive unsolicited than they are an email. So, like, so even though this particular story didn't talk about this, I think you need to be careful, not with just your email address that you're giving out, but with your telephone number. So I have created a Google Voice number that I used for nothing except for when I'm giving this number, because if you're going to send me something right now, I'm going to look right now. But other than that, I get no notifications. I don't have it installed on my device. I literally have to go to the website to see it. I just don't care. It's the closest thing to a burner account, as I have come up with. And Terrence, I can't remember the name of the show, but you on this awesome podcast with these three brothers have been hosting it since 2008. And you talked about the burner email introduced in iOS 15.
Apple has a hide my email function that I use specifically for stuff like this. When I go online to buy something, when I go to take a look at something, and exactly what Stephanie said, you know, uncheck the please do not send me notifications. I'll take it a step further and use the iPhone hide my email function to sign up using this quote unquote burner email account that forwards emails to my for real inbox. When I'm done, if I want to unsubscribe or when I don't want to purchase from it anymore, instead of me going to the website, instead of me going to the email and unsubscribing, I just deactivate the email account and then boom, that's done. So I would strongly advise anybody that's got an iPhone that's signing up for things, using that hide my email is much more gratifying when you go to disconnect that connection versus trying to unsubscribe and pray that in fact it unsubscribe when we already know it doesn't.
Right.
So
just to, just give a couple little tips and tidbits, from this particular story. We are talking about Square with the protocol article that we've referenced, to in our links. And I just want people to know that it is not less safe to tap to pay with your credit card on someone's phone than it would be to slide your card through a credit card reader. If you insert it into the, into a chip reader, you're fairly secure there. But when you actually slide and use that magnetic strip, that is darn near as unsecure as you can get when it comes to credit card transactions. So as I said, I kind of stood there and watched for a while. And when people would, I don't know if I want to put this on your phone, because they were thinking that they were going to be putting their credit card information into their phone. There was at least one,
their hearts.
I'll shout out. She was a Delta, but she was, I'm not going to say how old she was, but she was older than us. She was probably old enough to be our parent. And she's like,
we can see the picture.
Elder. Yeah, she was an elder.
We can see the picture.
And she's like, I just stand in line. I ain't really trusting that. And I wasn't going to go try to explain, hey, I'm Rob from the Tech Journal. Let me explain this tech to you. If I would have had a t-shirt and a microphone, I might have, but, I didn't do that, but I'm like, let me put the public service announcement out there. When you tap to pay, that is arguably the most secure way that you can use your credit card. You know,
outside of she may be on something, because I don't know how she paid, but I'm assuming if she's the picture that I'm imagining in my head, she has some cash in hand, and mm-hmm. cash is still king.
Oh, she right. she bought half that table up. Right. Anything that was anything that had her colors on it, she was getting. But she was having, you know, she was having a great time. But I just I noticed that it was like, nah, I just do it the old fashioned way. She's like, she even said, no, I just wanted to do it the old fashioned way, and went and then, you know, slid her card into the chip because she just felt more secure with that. So I think, you know, for people who are probably using the Square, you're probably going to run into that, to where folks, just because it's not what they normally do, it's going to take some time for them to actually get around to it. But I will just say this for anybody who's listening, when it comes to Square and you're doing tap to pay with an actual credit card and you're just tap, you're using, you know, to do that, that's pretty secure as far as using credit cards out in the wild goes. So I just wanted to kind of put that out there. But I thought it was a, you know, a good story. It was a tech angle that I saw from my experiences of Jiho this past weekend. So y'all, Jiho, that's what they call it. Greatest homecoming on earth.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
We're going to get into this next story. And this next story, hopefully we can get through a lot of this here. Yeah, but Elon.
Twitter all day.
Elon. This is a tech show, and this stuff is dominating mm-hmm. tech news, literally up to the hour that we're actually going to, you know, through this. So we just want to try to get as much of it knocked out as we can. So Elon did buy Twitter for $44 billion last Friday. And as much of a free speech warrior as he has claimed to be up until probably Thursday, Wednesday last week, he did go out and say, and basically, you know, released a letter, you know, trying to, you know, assure advertisers that, hey, everything's going to be okay when I'm at the helm. Don't stop giving us money.
And some have already done it. GM, yeah. A couple other places said we're gonna wait and see on this until he decide till we see which way the wind is blowing. So hopefully he can appease the most people.
The letter promised, you know, protection against misinformation, and then he tweeted some misinformation. Like the next day.
Minutes later.
Seconds later, you know, he's tweeting misinformation. So like, what are we really doing? What are we really talking about right now?
Right.
It's just, yeah.
So, some advertisers, they flat out said, if you reinstate the former president, we're out. As you said, some ain't even waiting. And this is no shock to us. I am shocked by the people that are shocked. Racist, anti-Semitic, misogynistic rants just were abound Friday and through the weekend on Twitter. What did you think was going to happen? I am, like I said, I'm not shocked by that. I fully, and I think all three of us, we actually expected it. We could have, you know, at 11:59, Twitter's probably Twitter. 12:01, Twitter's something different. We kind of anticipated that. How did the masses not think that this is exactly what was going to happen? Based off all the statements that he was making.
I think anybody that didn't know that this was going to happen was being naive. I'm sorry. They just are. We already know, you know, humans and the lowest common denominator and all the rest of that. I'm waiting on my, archive because I most likely will be deactivating my account, once I get all my tweets and stuff. I don't even want to have to log on and see. And even potentially be exposed to, you know, what I am already convinced Twitter is going to become, with this loose or lack of moderation. I barely use it anymore anyway. I used to be a very heavy Twitter user, but I barely even use it anymore. I used it a lot for the list feature because I had all my, you know, journalistic things that I would reference and whatever, but I'm like, I barely use it anymore. I can just let it quietly fade into the background.
Yeah, I can respect it. I can respect it. That's one of the things that I've always wondered in the back of my mind. A lot of people are doing a lot of posturing. A lot of people are doing a lot of talking. A lot of people are doing a lot of complaining, but I've always wondered, are you really about it? Are you really about it? Are you really about it to where you'll delete that Twitter? We shall see. My guess is y'all will still be there versus if we really want to make change.
Want to be onlookers, the looky-loos that want to kind of see the carnage happen.
The train wreck.
Right? Yeah, exactly. People want to watch the train wreck. And it's just like, I don't need to see the train wreck. I'm good.
So before we ever heard about Elon buying Twitter, I started basically with this show. We can go back a year. I started just getting more into it, just trying to have conversations with people I don't already know and have the email address, telephone number, or I'm connected to them on Facebook or what have you. Cause I've had a Twitter account forever. But I wasn't one of those people that was just like, I literally could go months and maybe in some cases I might even gone years without ever checking Twitter. So I just started getting into it and starting to build it. I'm trying to figure out how this thing works. And so is Elon Musk making me quit at this point? No, I'm probably not, but I'm kind of watching. I'm not like saying, hey, you need to go over and get on Twitter. I'm not trying to recruit people to the platform. But the more I see it, so you know, I think that there's multiple kinds of folks on there. The ones who are basically making a big deal about, yeah, I just can't stand it anymore and I'm going to leave the platform, and they keep tweeting about how they're leaving. All right, dog. How many times are you going to tell me that you're out until you are? But there are a lot of folks. And like you, Terrence, you know, I can respect this. There are a lot of folks who say it, and we don't even have to go to Friday. We can go back into when he initially said the first time that I'm trying to buy Twitter, and folks are like, yeah, I ain't down with that. I'm out. And we have not seen them since. There's a lot of folks who are in that category. So I think that there are a lot of people who are looking at, you know, Twitter and saying, you know, this is just not the platform for me anymore. I don't want to be there. You know, many people have made many stances about many other types of platforms. This is just another one. It'll be interesting to see how this goes. But like I said, I was shocked by the shock and all.
Definitely ain't going to pay to stay verified. That's the other part. Elon Musk has now trying to introduce this $20 subscription to get verified. I am verified on Twitter. I am not paying $20 to keep a blue check.
Well, he's giving you 3 months to think about it.
Reason.
He's giving you 3 months to think about it. You might not change your mind.
No, I'm good. I'm good. I'm paying. I'm not paying no money to stay verified or anything like that. So that's just another reason I would go ahead and get rid of my account, because I'm just not willing to pay. And if I were to stay on the platform, I would want to keep my blue check. I mean, that's, you know,
now you worked hard for it.
Kind of a necessary component to what I do. So the idea that I would now turn around and pay you $20 a month for the privilege, you know, of having this thing, just, it doesn't make any sense to me.
What you gonna do, Terrence?
And also, I will say, too, just for anybody who is thinking about it, the process is deactivation first. So when you go digging in through to your settings, the setting that says deactivate your account is where you start that process. So it'll give you the option to download all of your, an archive of all of your tweets, if you want that. You hit deactivate, you submit that deactivation request, and you have 30 days after you submit that request to reactivate the account in case you say, well, you know what, maybe I will stay on Twitter, I don't know. But after 30 days, then your account is deleted and you cannot get it back. You would have to go and create a new account. So for anybody that is thinking about that, that's the process for deleting your account on Twitter.
So do you have to request your data first and get that in copy in hard? Well, not.
Yes.
Like send them an email confirmation before you deactivate, or?
Well, yeah, when you get to that deactivation page, it'll ask you, do you want to download an archive of your tweets? You say, gotcha. Yes, you submit that request. You have to put your password back in, and I have two-step verification. So they had to send me a little code or whatever. So now I'm waiting. That process can take 24, 48 hours. And I'm sure at this point, a lot of people are probably requesting it.
Jamming it up.
Yeah. So it might take a little bit longer. So you have to wait. Don't deactivate. If you want your archive, I'll put it that way. If you want all of your tweets, don't deactivate your account until you get the confirmation that your file is ready, because they're going to send you a zip file that you can download, and that's all your tweets or whatever. So don't deactivate your account until you get the zip file of your tweets, and then deactivate. And then if you log back into Twitter, even if you don't say, well, I want to reactivate my account, if you just go back on Twitter at all within that 30-day time frame, they're going to assume you don't want to delete your account. So they're going to reactivate you automatically. So once you decide, I got my archive, I got all my tweets, I don't want to deal with Twitter no more, I'm submitting my deactivation request, leave Twitter alone.
Which for safekeeping to add, you know, a lot of people use aggregators I don't know if that's a good word for it, but you think of like Buffer, you think of Hootsuite, you think of some of these services that enable you to schedule tweets and then they tweet on your behalf. I would, if you're serious, I would consider disconnecting Twitter from those services so they don't tweet on your behalf, and that counts as you, quote unquote, still being
going
on Twitter.
Going back in there,
And plus, once you reactivate, you have to go through the whole process again. It's not like, oh, I didn't mean that. Let's keep it here.
I didn't mean to post
that. No, you got to start that whole thing over again.
Even if you just go back onto the platform, if you don't tweet anything, if you just want to scroll because something's trending that you want to see, they're going to consider that you wanting to stay on the platform. So once you submit that deactivation request, just delete Twitter off your phone, basically, and leave it alone. And in 30 days, your account will be deleted.
So Terrence, where are you at on this? Because I know that there's other, you know, other services that, because we're just going to take a stance on this. We don't like how the company is rolling. So you decided to get off of things that you were using. How do you feel about Twitter? Because I know you're on Twitter as well with quite a few followers out there.
Multiple accounts. You know, we do this podcast. I have another podcast. I got Brother Tech that I think I started on Twitter in 2008, sometime like that. I'm just going to let it fade. You know, if you haven't already figured out, I've kind of fallen out of love with social media in general.
No.
So I have no problem with letting Twitter fade. Now, I do feel sorry for people who have utilized and still heavily rely on Twitter as a vehicle for marketing and advertising, because social media has done wonders for people with a platform, with a product, whatever the case may be, to actually utilize those services to get the word out, because, you know, you may not be able to afford, you know, or compete in the Google ad space. So you use Twitter, you know, or you use Instagram or whatever the case may be. And I feel sorry for those people who really are like at a crossroads. It's like, I really don't jive with what this dude is doing or what's proposed to be doing. But at the same time, this is like, this is my your bread and blood. Butter.
Yeah.
Right, right, yeah. Right. Unfortunately, I ain't balling like that on social media. So it's easy for me to be like, yeah, I just let it fade or deactivate the account or whatever the case may be. But I can only imagine, you know, the position some people have put themselves in, not really wanting to be a part of this, but really you can't not be a part of
yeah.
it.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. And especially, like I said, going back to the whole verification thing, you know, you think all the journalists, all the celebrities, all the public, actual public figures that, mm-hmm. you know, kind of relied on that to legitimize what they do that just aren't going to be able to pay $20 a month. Like that's yeah. not, it's not a lot of money, but it's not a little bit of money neither. You know what I mean? When you think about the grand scheme of everything you're subscribing to these days mm-hmm. and paying for, mm-hmm. that's not no little bit of money. And you would really have to like make a judgment call on whether or not it was worth it. And like to your point, Terrence, like I don't have enough followers on Twitter, you know, mm-hmm. to care much, you know, the right. blue check doesn't feed my ego enough for me to pay for it. And so I can very easily let it go, but that might not be the case for everybody.
And Stephanie, right. for you, it wasn't the blue check. You have the white check. I mean, you actually have been verified because you are a person of note in your space, right? I mean, you didn't pay yeah. for that. So
no, it was way back and yeah. I've had it for years.
Right.
And it
so,
was way back when you actually had to submit, you know, a mm-hmm. copy of your driver's license
right.
and evidence of your public persona or whatever, and they had to make a determination. So it's just like, you know, y'all already did that. So now for me to have to turn back around and pay y'all for the privilege of what you already gave me, like I'm not with that.
Like I want to see how true this is because, you know, this is just me. I'm not the billionaire that now runs this company. But $20 to be verified, and it's not a verification like yours. To where you are a person of note. It's basically
it's
whoever.
It's just saying, this is who I am, who I say I am.
So yeah, so I'm like, okay, that's, you know that's $240 a year. You know, that you know,
right.
that's not, in the grand scheme of things, that's not a lot. So there's going to be a whole lot of folks who are out there. Oh, this is how I get verified. And now I've got this badge and it means something. And hopefully, you know, people who have the white badge, like what you have and the blue badge, you know, there would still be some kind of distinction, but it doesn't sound like that. It sounds like now you're going to pay to play, in this sandbox. And I
get, cause that was his whole thing. Like everything's a bot. We need to make sure we're not pandering to these bots, but yeah, $20 is not no little bit of money. I ain't paying it.
So one of the things, you know, I was just looking at various stories on this. So on The Verge, Nilay Patel, he wrote scathing is not the right word, but he basically said this is what he thinks about this whole Twitter deal. And, you know, for the most part, thinks it was a mistake. And it's a long article. It's a good read. I put it in our show notes. So it's there for anybody who wants to go check it out. But just kind of, you know, giving you some of the high points on it. You know, I actually went and took some notes. So this Twitter acquisition is the third biggest technology acquisition in the history of Earth. So there are, you know, like Microsoft's Activision deal that is soon to go through is the biggest. There's one in between that, and then there's this. So this is a huge, 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 you know, acquisition. But, you know, some of the things that I was looking at here is that, one of the things that, you know, Twitter, they only have $633 million in positive cash flow. Their debt before this deal was $50 million in 2021. Their debt now is $13 billion.
Mm-hmm.
So just the interest on the debt is twice what the company makes in a year.
And that's why those board members did not care who bought Twitter. Just so happened
they were like,
that
just
Elon,
get us out of here.
I'm trying to cash out before this ship runs into the iceberg.
Like whale from like whale don't hesitate.
Parachute. Let me get my severance. Let me get my, you know, people were bailing. It's crazy.
And
it's
even crazy. Elon, walking those executives out, the CEO and the general counsel, whoever was walked out that day, they was probably, oh man, but they ain't tripping really, because it's like, they got their money. They got paid.
The CEO of the company
resume
and others was escorted out by security. And the whole time, if that was me and I'm carrying my box out with security, please have somebody with a camera on me. Just make sure my check for $46 million don't bounce.
Right.
I wouldn't have lasted that long. I would have chucked the deuces as soon as it came across my Twitter feed. I'm like, yep, I ain't going into work tomorrow, because what's the point?
I ain't even showing up. Y'all can keep whatever's in my desk and, you know, whatever.
Send me a shipping label.
So a story that I just saw right before we went live is Twitter preps to lay off 25% of the workforce. So according to, and this is a Washington Post article, and I'll put it in our show. I was literally looking at this 5 minutes before we got on. They're about to lay off 7,000 folks. And so let me say this. Let me preface this. I feel for anyone who loses their job. You know, I do. It's like, you know, if you were working and you lose your job for no fault of yourself, that kind of sucks. You know, it really does, because it scrambles your life. You've now got to go figure out what you're going to do next in most cases. That being said, y'all should have known that this was coming. This is what happens when these big acquisitions, happen. In this case, you know, Elon is going to try to figure out as quickly as he can how to make money on this company. Yeah, so
they've had a lot of time to work on the resumes. This has been a whole spectacle for what? We've been talking about it for what? The last 3 months?
No, it's been longer than that. We started talking about this back in April, I think. Exactly. March or April.
So Elon's been talking crazy about how he don't like leadership and the policy people. So I would have been.
You should have had your resume dusted off with the quickness. Mm-hmm. He also, to your point about laying people off, he has also threatened to fire the team that is supposed to be standing up this $19.99 a month subscription by November 7th if it's not done by then. Mm-hmm. So, you know,
That's next week, y'all. Just now, these are, you know, probably really, really good developers that are doing stuff for Twitter. But yeah, he gave them a next week. What kind of motivation is that to these kind of people?
It would have been me motivation to tank that joint.
Yeah. It's like I would be so quiet quitting.
It's a poison coach.
Right.
I would just be waiting to collect my unemployment at this point. And I'm like, I'm going to stay so you can fire me so I can get my unemployment.
Right.
But I'm going to be chilling in the meantime.
Right. Mm-hmm. So it's just like that. Now, these, once again, they're reports. We have to see, you know, what comes out from this. But this, you know, I kind of agree with this. I don't believe that Twitter, if it ever was, the place where people just went to, like, you know, disseminate ideas and stuff like that. If it ever was that, if it ever was the town square, I don't think that it ever will be. Going back, because, this actually goes back to when I said that, we'll link to the Nilay Patel article on The Verge. Elon, if he's going to effectively run Twitter, he's not going to be able to be the free speech warrior that he's always been, because we've talked about free speech on this show before. I'm sure we will talk about it again, but people don't realize what free speech is. Number one, that is, when your freedom of speech is infringed upon, no company is doing it. It's only the government that does it. That's number one. It's basically you say something the government didn't like, and then they come after you. That is what having your free speech trampled on, actually is like, that is I don't want to say it's unique to the United States, but it is something that, was probably first here.
It's unique to the United States, because to Saray's point in the comments, the international fallout.
They'll drop the hammer on your ass.
Quick. You know what I mean? GDPR alone, And
so, well,
then you think about countries like India, where they have threatened to jail Twitter employees if they didn't ban certain accounts and didn't suppress certain information. Like, What y'all? I don't think he's ready for this. I really don't think he's ready.
So yeah, so that's the one part. But it's like, okay, I'm going to allow anyone to say whatever they want. Like, you know, if you want to say racist stuff, as long as you're not threatening anyone, that's, you know, that's covered under free speech, and it is. But people think that freedom of speech doesn't come with freedom from consequences of said speech. That has never been the case.
I think they know that. They're trying to impose. You can't tell me what to do.
And we ain't gonna talk. I'm just gonna say, in the case of Kanye West, he is clearly being shown that, yeah, you can say what you want to say, but we can react. See, that's the other part of it. It is freedom of speech when Adidas says we ain't hollering at you no more. It's freedom of speech when did y'all hear this? Well, this is the one today. The Goodwill will not give away his stuff. They will not give away his clothes.
Pretty much muted
at the Goodwill anymore. I have two that made regular news, and I was like, the Goodwill? I was like, wow, it's like you can't be given his stuff anymore. But that's you know, just the other side of freedom of speech. It's like you can say what you want to say. I can react to what you say like I want to say it, and that's what Elon is going to have to protect against. He's going to want to allow people to say whatever they want to say. But when GM says, nah, dog, I'm good. Like, I literally, when I saw the GM article, I had that Randy Jackson, nah, dog, that's going to be a no from me. That literally is what popped up into my head, how they responded to Elon about, nah, we ain't waiting to see what you do. We going to go ahead and stop giving you money now. And if you good in maybe 6 months, you can come back and try again. But that's how,
again,
I took that.
GM is a company too. So I don't trust companies in general.
Exactly.
So they could be posturing just like Elon is posturing. In 3 months, they'd be back with Super Bowl Twitter ads.
Oh, I almost expected
January.
And this is not even a jaded view. I almost fully expect that. You know, I fully expect that these big companies are going to come back at some point. They will determine this is the penance, that you have to pay. And, we'll come back and we'll do business as usual. I fully expect that. But, like I said, this is a big story. Like I said, it's ongoing. The last thing I will say about this, y'all remember Vine? Mm-hmm. Yeah. It looks like they're trying to bring Vine back. So it's like,
well, because they're literally, I mean, for what it was worth at the time, it was almost like the springboard for like TikTok and for like Instagram,
right?
These short videos, right?
Oh, it absolutely was.
For whatever reason, it went away because Twitter was trying new things. Well, one, they wasn't making money off of it. So that goes along with Elon trying to make Twitter the everything app. It's going to need a short video service to bring in them young kids, because we over here complaining versus these young kids gonna be doing them little dances and put them on Twitter. So he's shaking the trees, but he's also trying to bring in the user base that he wants. So we'll just have to wait and see.
So this is a good segue into this next story, Stephanie, that you put in the notes about our subscriptions, the future of the internet. And I kind of think they are. We're already seeing that. I mean, you can subscribe to just us. I mean, we actually have people who subscribe to us and they get additional benefits. So, yeah, I mean, you know, people subscribe, you know, because I didn't do that. You know, I won't wedge this commercial in here. I didn't do it at the beginning of the show. But, yeah, we have Discord. If you head over to, patreon.com/thetechjohn, we actually have subscriptions that people can subscribe, where they're giving us something every month to continue to do this show, and they get additional benefits. One of them being Discord, one of them being able to watch, us do the live stream of this show. So when you ask that question, I kind of think, yeah, because I have found this, like, wow, I'm like a member personally. I'm a member of like 3 paid communities, to where I'm actually subscribing to be a member of that community. So I is it going to be for everyone? No, I think free will always reign. Maybe not reign supreme always, but it's going to always be out there. But I think that, you know, folks are saying, I want this kind of content. I want access to this. I want to talk to these people. I'm willing to pay a subscription to get access to them.
I'd have to think about that. I mean, I subscribe to media outlets, but like, I don't subscribe to any people. Well, I take that back. My brother has a Patreon. So just as family support, I am a subscriber to his Patreon. And I think I actually might be a subscriber to our Patreon. I'm not sure if I subscribe to our Patreon or not. But you know, I by and large, I don't subscribe to people. There's just nobody out there right now anyway whose content is compelling enough that I need to see special things or, you know, exclusive access or anything like that. So I don't know. I don't know if that is something I ever see myself doing. Free is very compelling. And like I said, until I come across that person that just has that content that's like, oh, I just have to see their content. I don't see that happening for me.
I can see, I actually subscribe to one or I think just one other person that I'm actually like, oh, okay, I really want to see what they're talking about either early or additional content that they don't really put out for free. But I definitely see that being an avenue for people who are disenchanted with social media in general. Now, the question is, what are they putting out that would make people want to subscribe? For example, right. Instagram has started letting people become or create subscription services to where you get additional information. Again, I really don't be on social media like that, but there are some people who I see in my notifications say, oh, this person now enables, I forget the actual terminology, but they say this person now enables you to subscribe. And I'm like, subscribe to what? Have you Patreon, you can actually put out there and say, okay, for this amount of dollars, you get this and any other. For this amount of dollars, you get this and that third. For this amount, you get this. That there's no tiers. There's no marketing. There's no advertising in Instagram that I saw. It just says this person is now enabling subscription. I'm like, oh, that's nice.
Right. Good for them.
But at the same time, I'm talking out both sides of my neck, right? Because the only way content creators, the only way influencers, the only people that are creating actual content and they don't want to be beholden to the algorithm is you get off of these platforms and create content that people will pay for. So therefore, you don't have this person or this platform in the middle eating into your profits, and two, changing, you have to fight the algorithm to get your content in front of people in the first place. The only way to do that is to get off the platform. And the only way you get off the platform altogether. And the only way to get off the platform is if people pay you to get off the platform, because TikTok and Instagram and YouTube, they're profitable for people who have figured it out, you know.
So when I Stephanie read through this article, and then I started to think about, actually, I kind of think maybe they're onto something here. I wasn't thinking subscribing to people per se. I'm not necessarily opposed to that, but it's like, you know, we have people who subscribe to this podcast for a myriad of reasons, but my gut would tell me the major reason is because they like what we're, you know, they like the content that we're putting out and they want to see us continue to put the content out. So they know that, well, you know, I can subscribe here, help support this show and let them do the thing that they're getting value for. So it's basically, you know, one of the things when I talk to people about podcasting and launching podcasts or just content creation in general is like, what are you willing, you know, what are you trading as the creator in exchange for the, you know, for the time and attention from the audience that you're asking for? And you know, so you basically, it's a contract. I'm going to give you this content. They're going to give us their time and attention. And then some, super fans, there is a white paper, or a manifesto, I think is probably more accurately what you would call it, called 1000 True Fans. I believe it's by Kevin Kelly, and it's years old. It's been out for years. I'll put a link to this in the show notes, but he basically is writing this manifesto about if you can get 1000 people to rock with you, you basically can have a nice middle class income. Because it doesn't take, you know, 2 million followers. It takes 1000 people who are rocking with you, who you are giving them what they want, and they've therefore are saying, this is the content I want. I am willing to support that, and it allows you to have a living. And I kind of agree with that. I think that, you know, that's working. And so, like I said, there are now three content creators. Two are brands. One is actually a person that I support because I like the content that I'm getting and I don't want to listen to ads. So, you know, there's always something that you get. You know, I don't want to have to listen to ads in the show, so I can pay into their Patreon, and then I'm able to get my private feed just like our listeners are, you know, and not have to listen to it. So they're providing something to me. I am providing, you know, monetization to them. And I think that, you know, just as we go forward, like, you know, this whole Twitter thing, there are people, as you were saying, to get that white check. They're, you know, being told now you got to come up and give 20, you know, Elon, $20 a month. I don't know if I want to do that, but you may have literally hundreds of thousands, in some cases, millions of followers on there. Do you move to another platform that could do the same thing to you in years time? Or do you create your own platform? Do you get your own email list? Do you have your own list of people? Do you have your own Discord server? Do you have your own, circle, you know, community? Do you have your own Slack channel? Do you do these things on your own where your community can support you directly as compared to, well, everything is free, but we have to go through a big company that's trying to monetize, you know, both you and them.
But to keep it a buck, now, if we're really trying to keep it a buck, right, we're saying, let's just say, for instance, we're saying, Twitter and Instagram and Facebook and TikTok and YouTube, they're whack. They're not going to let you keep your money. They're not going to let you keep your fans. If you try to get them to click a link to leave the platform, these algorithms devalue that and they won't show it to your people. But let's just say you do get them off and get them on Patreon. You still on Patreon. And if Patreon decide to change something or charge more or do something else, but oh man, all right. So we leaving Twitter, join my email
to
list.
Go where? Exactly.
Now you got to get on MailChimp. Yeah. You got to get on Klaviyo.
Right. Yeah.
You got to get on all these other ones. And then they change something. So it's almost like
you're here. Somebody else
here's the difference. Here's the difference though. Those are tools where you are the customer. So if you like, I have a list that I've built with, you know, a bunch of people on it that I use ActiveCampaign. That's where I build it. I pay ActiveCampaign a monthly fee every single month to do that. ActiveCampaign makes their money not off of my, you know, the people who are on my list. They make their money off of me because I am paying them a monthly fee to have them as a service provider. So unlike where Twitter is trying to make money off of the people who use Twitter, unlike YouTube is trying to make people money off the people who watch YouTube, unlike Facebook who's trying to make you know, money off of people who have Facebook accounts. When you're talking about like, you know, an email newsletter or you're talking about a community that you've built, those applications, those softwares, they make their money off the, you know, off the people who are paying to actually have the service. So I think it's a little bit different to where, you know, I fully expect that my cable is going to work, you know, as long as I keep paying the bill. They're not making money off of me they are. That's probably not a great example. They are, but you get what I'm saying. They're making their money off of the subscription that I'm paying to have the service as compared to all the people in my house that watch. They're going to, you know, get all their data and then, you know, and then sell them and serve them ads. So that's where I think that there is, you know, some benefit, you know, to what this article was actually saying. And I think, and I can kind of see it coming in the future, but like I said, I don't know if it's going to be, you know, it's a hell of a drug. It's like when you can just get on Facebook for free
to get people, to get people,
even a dollar a month,
told them that this would counteract the privacy implications, because if you subscribe, we won't sell your data. They could say that, but we, you know, let's assume they would be, you know, honorable in doing
the contract.
Right. Would people pay for that? That's you know, I guess it depends on how much, but I don't even know if I would pay for that. I'm just like,
It depends. I think it depends on the benefit that you're getting. You know,
on the platform,
most
and
no.
I guess if I was legitimately monetizing these platforms the way, you know, I could be,
right,
then yes. Yeah. But now, while it's just a bunch of people watching my tech videos, like, there's just not a lot of incentive for me right now.
And we'll talk about some of our great patrons who are in our live chat right now. They are less than 1%. They are less than 1%. They are a rounding error compared to the total number of people who listen to the show. But like I said, I'm just glad that, you know, somewhere south of 1% have decided that, you know what, I rock with those folks over to Tech John. I'm going to support them. And that's what they're doing. So, we talk with them every week, and I don't see that going away. I see more and more of that happen. Let me just say like this: Patreon made more money this month than it made last month. So subscriptions, you know, are working.
Yeah.
So we haven't done a spotlight in a minute, but we are to that time of the show. So Stephanie, I know you had one in here, and this one's a little different. This is somebody who is active right now, who's doing stuff.
This was news. To see it in my looking for stories for this episode, I happened to see this and I was just like, this could be a good spotlight. Why not? And we may have had Aisha Bowe in a spotlight previously, but today Aisha Bowe becomes the first Black woman to set to travel to space with Jeff Bezos founded Blue Origin. And I'll just read the article. It's not super long. Aisha Bowe is out of this world, literally. In a post shared on LinkedIn, the STEM board founder and CEO revealed that she is anticipating becoming the sixth Black woman and the first to fly on Blue Origin's New Shepard to head to space. This is her LinkedIn post. I'm going to space as the first Black woman confirmed to fly with Blue Origin on New Shepard. I am expected to be the sixth Black woman to cross the Kármán line, the internationally recognized boundary of space. This mission comes 30 years after former NASA astronaut Mae Jemison became the first Black woman to travel to space in 1992. Since then, there are only four other Black women who carry that distinction: NASA astronauts Stephanie Wilson, Joan Higginbotham, Jessica Watkins, and Dr. Sean Proctor of the SpaceX Inspiration 4 mission. I am honored to follow the footsteps of these incredible women. I can't wait to fly on a future flight of Blue Origin's New Shepard. As the first Black... Okay, blah, 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 blah. We won't... they just kind of read that. And then a little bit about Aisha Bowe. Bowe is a former NASA rocket scientist and the creator of STEM Board. The engineering solutions company has been recognized by Inc. 5000 as one of the fastest growing companies in America. What's more, she has raised nearly $2 million in venture capital funding for Lingo. As Afrotech previously reported, Lingo is a self-paced coding kit designed to help students learn technical concepts at home. According to Bowe's website, her journey first began in a pre-algebra class in community college. Since then, she has gone on to earn a bachelor's degree in aerospace and a master's in space systems engineering from the University of Michigan. And currently, she serves on her alma mater's aerospace department industry advisory board. So shout out to Aisha Bowe for being the sixth Black woman in space.
Good for her. Good for her. Not your boy, but good for her. Because I ain't messing with space, Jack, until the Earth is crumbling and they make us.
We gotta go somewhere.
One of my favorite lines from a Clint Eastwood movie, when he says that jumping out of an airplane is not a natural act. It's not. And it's like, I'm not leaving the planet. It's perfectly okay for me right now. Like, it's got a lot of issues with it, but I don't need to go. We ain't found other planets that can, you know, that I can, you know, do what I'm doing like you. So I'm good too.
I get it. I mean, I ain't gonna knock your hustle. You know, I ain't gonna, what's the other phrase? I ain't gonna, I forget the term, but anyway, you know, like I said, I ain't knocking it. Not your boy. That's all.
I wanted to be an astronaut for a while. As I've probably mentioned on this show before, my undergraduate scholarship was paid for by NASA. So I got to do internships at two different NASA facilities, in the summertime. And I mean, you can't be at Kennedy Space Center and not want to be an astronaut. I mean, it's just not possible. If you're a technical person, technically inclined person, just to be around all of that space stuff, you get caught up and you really do just, you know, and this was back when they were still launching NASA missions. I got a chance to actually see an actual launch from Cape Canaveral. I got to see the orbiter come back on piggyback style on a 747. You know, I met astronauts. So it's just like, you can't go to KSC and not want to be an astronaut. So definitely, you know, after that internship, that was the internship after my freshman year in college, I was just like, oh, I'm going to space. This is what it is. I'm like, so, I see what's going on here. Everything happening in this place is dope AF. And I want to be one of the people to go as well. But then, you know,
I'm not saying that I would
dreams get deferred and all the rest of that.
Like I said to Rob, damn the statistics, right?
I'm not saying that I would never go to space, because never is a long time. What I can see in my future is that if you're traveling internationally, you know, let's, you know, 15, 20, 25 years from now, when we still should be flying around doing the kind of stuff we need to do to get from point A to point B, it just may be more efficient to literally go into low Earth orbit so you can go really fast to get to Australia, as compared to having to take, you know, 24 hours to get there, flying, so it will be like that for me. But by the time that I'm willing to do it, it'll be so regular that you don't really think about it. We're not talking about spotlighting somebody because they got on a plane and flew internationally. That's kind of how I see it. What I don't have a desire to do, I'm good. I don't need to go to the moon. I don't need to go to, you know, I don't need to go to Mars. I don't need to do none of that. But anyway, y'all.
Yeah, no, I don't have to do none of that either.
I'm good. It's that time of this, you know, the show for us to start wrapping it up. So, Stephanie, why don't you tell folks how they can get at you?
Follow me all around the web at Tech Life Steph. Appreciate y'all.
And you can find me on the internets at Brother Tech. That's BROTHATECH.
And I am at Rob Dunwood on all the things. And we are also at The Tech John on all the things. So come holler us there. And until we meet in a week's time. Peace.
Peace.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.